So my talk for today is how to have governance for a sustainable OpenSUSE project. This is a little bit different than some of the conversations I've had in the past where, you know, it's just sort of a straight line between, hey, I'd like to try these things, let's see if they work. In this talk, which is not going to be super long, I expect there's probably going to be a fair amount of Q&A at the end. I'm going to go over a little bit at a high level how some peer projects structure their decisions, what their governance looks like, and how those operations actually end up impacting their own communities. So let's get started. So you've heard me talk about this before, that the duocracy kind of degrades into whoever has the loudest voice wins. This is governance by volume, which I don't think is particularly effective, and it's not particularly inviting. The outcomes end up reflecting, you know, who has the loudest voice, who is flooding the zone with, you know, the messages they're writing. It can also mean that when there are controversial decisions, nothing happens because the entire system is sort of biased for inaction in that case. Without any sort of clear ownership over the direction of the project as a whole, we end up with situations where nobody feels necessarily empowered to say yes or no. And it can kind of can turn into, you know, who knows whom best, and that's not a great system either. I had some conversations last night around with some of the release managers about, you know, if this situation arose, how would you handle it? And the response is more or less, well, I don't know. Like, I'm not the one who has to make that decision. And so we end up in a situation where there's a lack of decision-making authority, it's just whoever is the loudest wins. And to a certain extent, it also leads to contributor fatigue. Because if there's no clear direction, every single thing has to be fought over, and eventually just people get worn out and say, you know what, forget it, it's not worth it. And we can see some of that over time, that if we look at how many people have attended, say, OSC for the past couple of years, the number is steadily declining. And I think that's true in the community as well, if you look at, you know, contributor data. So I have a proposal. The first, we keep the board exactly as it is. The charter is pretty well defined. I'm not actually sure if the board can decide to just do this committee stuff regardless of a vote, but I don't think it will have legitimacy if we try to do that. So this is what I'd like to do and propose it, and we as a community decide if this is something that we want. First thing is the technical steering committee. This sets the technical direction for the project and acts as a tiebreaker when there's conflict. This can mean when there's directions that different groups want to take that don't align. It can mean when maintainers disagree. It means even when, if you have like an intransigent maintainer who kind of continues to want to do their own thing, which is fine, but isn't in the direction of the project, then the project can say, well, you know what, we're going to start drawing from this other development project instead because you're not following the direction of the overall project anymore. So there's nothing saying you have to do it this way, but if you're not going in the same direction of the project, then your work probably will not be included anymore. And that's sort of governance by legitimacy. These are all going to be elected roles. So if you disagree with the direction, run for the front for position on that committee, vote differently next time, there's, you know, an escape hatch for it. Next up is the Community and Marketing Committee. This handles growth, onboarding, healthy communication spaces. This is where the moderation team, which right now is functioning really well on its own, but sort of exists floating in the ether because it's not necessarily an officially sanctioned group, but it's sort of something we've all recognized is needed, right? This involves marketing. This is a place where newcomers who want to do things like social media can land. Honestly, in both of these committees, I see places for people affiliated with SUSE. I know that SUSE Marketing would help contribute to OpenSUSE Marketing if they had a clear way to do it, and there isn't one. And in the past, when they've tried, they've found, well, who do we talk to? And once they try reaching out to people, they can either be met with hostility or toxicity, and nobody's in a professional capacity is going to say, sure, I'll sign up for that. And so instead, we end up losing access to that. So the weak governance helps a few. I mean, the people that are doing a lot of this work, I'm sure it's self-fulfilling. But without a defined process, that's how the direction gets set. Like I say, the loudest voice wins. It works until it doesn't scale, or you know, the people doing the work burn out, or the people that are tired of fighting burn out and leave, and then it doesn't help the health of the project. It's not inviting, it's not sustainable. Newcomers can't find out where they can contribute. I mean, I've said this in the opening talk, that there's no entry point. And then over time, health erodes. When we have people naturally leave the project, life changes, priorities change, jobs change. It turns out that, you know, you're working so hard on something else that OpenSUSE isn't a priority anymore. You become a parent, all these things that happen in life. And if there's nobody to fill the bench, then the project as a whole shrinks, and that's not healthy. There's a little blurb on the bottom about, you know, bus factor that I'm not going to get into, but if we have like a few people that do everything, then obviously, I mean, that's a problem in any organization. So, where are we now? The board, 2-year terms with a SUSE appointed chair. I think this works fairly well. We covered that in the introduction talk, where this year has been pretty stable, which is good. The duocracy, which I think is a charitable term for it, because I think it's kind of closer to anarchy in a lot of ways, which I know a lot of people appreciate, but it doesn't lead to consistent outcomes. There's no technical body at all. I mean, I know that there are the occasional technical discussions that happen on mailing lists. More often than not, I think what can end up happening is that a lot of the detailed technical discussions end up happening on SUSE internal Slack channels, and then the decisions are dumped on the community, and that's not healthy either. Having a technical steering committee means that those decisions need to actually be documented publicly, discussed publicly. And it's not just enough to have a SUSE team discuss them and say, well, you know, we all agreed on this, so we're doing it now. That's not in the nature of a community either. And there's no community body. I mean, there are people that serve these roles. I mean, Doug does a great job of this. Lubosch does a great job of this. I don't want to, you know, name everybody because I know I'll miss a few people. But there are individuals that are doing this well. But again, there's no way to join that group. There's no way to say, hey, I'd like to contribute. Hey, I'd like to be a voice of the community. And this is not only because there's no entry point, it's also because if there's no mandate attached to this, what newcomer is going to come in and say, you know what, I feel entitled to speak for the entire OpenSUSE community? And how would people react to somebody who did believe that was okay? So, as promised, there's going to be a quick review of other peer projects, working on governance bodies, how they'd handle technical discussions, what the terms and election looks like, and what I'm kind of terming as a good metric for the health of a project, and please don't take this at all as me saying that that SUSE is looking to withdraw sponsorship, because that's not what I'm saying at all. This is more saying, if a primary sponsor of any of these projects were to back out, would the community survive? And I think it varies based on the community we're talking about. So first up, probably our biggest peer is Fedora. The top body is the Fedora Council. That's kind of like our board. Strategy, budget, trademarks, final ruler on conflicts, that sort of thing. Like our board, it mixes community members with Red Hat appointed roles and decides by consensus. This is pretty much how our board works. But they also do have the technical and community aspects of it. The technical side, FESCO, community elected engineering that owns technical features and policy implementation. As I understand it, it's a little bit trickier right now because occasionally FESCO doesn't have enough members. We'll get to that in a minute. Not that specifically, but in general. And the Mindshare Committee, which is sort of exactly what I mean with the Community and Marketing Committee. Get out there, spread the word, make sure it's healthy, and have a healthy project. And the Health Signal, they've got 2,000 plus contributors strong with only about a third of affiliated with Red Hat. Project leadership turned over relatively recently after a decade of stability, which means, you know, there's still some health in newcomers coming in. And the direction is set well beyond what Red Hat's looking for, in theory. Out of all of these, I'd say this is probably the healthiest peer project that we have. I do believe that if outside of the baseline financial commitments for things like hardware infrastructure, that if Red Hat were to withdraw from Fedora, it would probably be generally okay. Next up, GNOME. Not strictly a peer project because it's not a distribution, but it's, you know, a similarly sized open source environment. They have a foundation board, 9 seats. I think that's big. Staggered terms, just like we do. Elected owns the same sort of decisions that our board does. They have a technical release team that, well, the board decides what ships, but it's kind of not really a technical governing body. And each of the module owners end up being responsible for what goes into their own components. I have to imagine there's a certain amount of cross-coordination or the entire thing would fall apart, but otherwise, there's a lot of independence. Health signal, the structure works, a little uneven footing. There's been some struggles with finances. Diversified sources of finances, which is good. Yet there's been a lot of churn, and in the past few years, there's been a lot of conflict. This kind of demonstrates that structure alone isn't enough. It's necessary, but not sufficient for a healthy community. KDE is a good example of a project that's very healthy. Registered nonprofit, which I'm not looking to get into that discussion at all today. That can be a separate discussion as it relates to OpenSUSE. 5-member board, 3-year terms, similar responsibilities, that works. The release team is independent of the EV, where the board, their board equivalent does not have any technical direction at all. And this is kind of where we're looking to go. The board will have to be in a position where if there are sort of disputes between the technical and the community and marketing committee, then the board will have to mediate those. But otherwise, technical decisions will belong to the TSC. And they divide up into working groups for different aspects of the community, which is something that we can consider. I would say that would be underneath the community and marketing committee, but that's kind of how I envision it. Ubuntu. Obviously the most successful from a user perspective, but from a contributor perspective, how healthy is it? When you talk about what would happen if its primary benefactor withdrew, it would fall apart immediately. There is a community council, set social policy, code of conduct, dispute resolution. Members are sort of nominated and then confirmed by a vote. The technical board owns the architecture, packaging standards, release sign-off. They're sort of a weird outlier here because they are also a downstream of Debian, so there's only so much impact they can have, but still, they're wildly successful from a user perspective. And in terms of the sponsor, without Mark Shuttleworth, the entire thing falls apart. It is explicitly not a democracy, and in recent years, the community council shrank down to 1 member and then was revived as saying, well, you know, this is a problem, we have to renew it. And I would say that's probably not the mark of a healthy community. So where we are on this, the current situation, we're in the fragile state, kind of a mixed bag. We're strong at the top in engineering. We have an electric board with public terms. We have a number of public projects that are in good health. We don't have any formal decision-making process for anything. Things that ride to the board's level, that's a vote, that's the only decision-making process we have, but otherwise there's no technical direction, there's no formal organization for organizing the community. We have great events like this, but they're largely ad hoc. I mean, they're repeated, but not, you know, formally managed. And then we have, I mean, to be fair, it's largely sponsored by SUSE. And I'll be candid that I think if SUSE were ever to withdraw, and I'm not saying we would, that I do think that OpenSUSE would not be particularly healthy afterwards. And I think that's something that we as a community, and I say this knowing full well I'm an employee of SUSE, can do more to try to backstop. Now, what I'm looking to do, the TSC introduces that stabilizing layer for the technical decision making. It means we have a direction. I have some ideas about what would look like for next steps, like what we should, the directions that I'd like to see the project heading, but that's prescriptive. That's not what I'm trying to do here. I'm trying to put in a framework for decision making. The decisions become distributed, legible, reviewable. They're not made behind closed doors. It's not the same as seeing, like, well, we made this decision privately, and here's the summary of how that decision was made. That's not the same thing as transparency. These discussions need to happen publicly. And the community and marketing committee can target onboarding and entry points and, you know, try to make the community more welcoming, like I was saying earlier. But like I said, this is not enough. This is necessary for a healthy community, but it's not sufficient for a healthy community. It's going to take effort from people stepping up into these roles that are committed to actually following through on this vision of saying, hey, yes, we want a technical direction, we want to reach out to people, we want to lower these barriers. And with some of the questions that I've seen in this room and that I've seen on the mailing list, I think that we have enough people to do this. We just need people to volunteer. I don't think I need to go through this. I can share the slides later if anybody's interested, but this is sort of the dense version of how everything compares. I think I kind of covered this in line. And so here's where everything falls right now on a health spectrum, I guess it would be. You can see where the decisions are made, how healthy they are. I think this is largely due to some weaknesses with how FESCO has been run recently. But this is accurate. OpenSUSE is not in a great place when it comes to community health. And I think we could do more there. So that was sort of the introduction for people that haven't heard me talk about this for the past 2 years. The good news, at least from my perspective, is that I made my first draft I posted, I think, what was it, in February or something. And shortly after that was FOSDEM. And I saw a lot of feedback from people meeting at FOSDEM discussing this. And the signal that I got from that wasn't that the discussion was about why do we need this, it was about how do we do it, which tells me that there's a lot of interest in something like this. It's just, you know, the devil's in the details. So what do we move forward with? Originally, my proposal was that we have 7 members of each committee. And the feedback coming out of FOSDEM was, you know what, maybe 5 would be more realistic with the size of the community that we have. And if it turns out that there's enough interest repeatedly with people wanting to join these, that having a bigger size would make sense, then that's something we can consider later. We can have specific rules for how votes work, where we can have streamlined voting processes that, you know, if there's no real contention, but if somebody really wants to force a discussion and a vote, then that can happen. I think that's kind of a sign of a healthy community if we say, you know what, the discussion needs to happen on this, especially if that discussion ends up being transparent and documented so that everybody understands what the objections were, how the discussion went, and what the outcomes of that discussion were. I would expect the CMC to be the first stop for things like moderation. I would expect the moderation team to be sort of a subcommittee of the CMC, have that official mandate to monitor the official communication channels. I think we should be louder about which ones are actually official and which ones aren't, so that, you know, the ones that are particularly toxic, we can say that that's not us. And the ones that don't respond to moderation, for example. The board's scope is deliberately narrowing. It will be not involved in COC discussions. It will not be involved in moderation discussions. It's mostly about legal, trademarks, financing, that sort of thing. So for those who have been concerned that the board has been overstepping in the past, we're deliberately narrowing the scope. One of the things that keeps getting flagged is what happens to maintainers. Are they still free to do whatever they want? And the answer, like I said earlier, is yes. But that's not a guarantee that the work you do will be accepted into the main part of the project if you're not following the project direction. And I think that's a fair approach, because I don't think in any developer community, any volunteer community, nobody can be compelled to do anything. But I also think that if the larger project has a different direction, the larger project shouldn't be forced to bow to the whims of one maintainer. And this is tested. I mean, this is the way Fedora does it. There are small variances in some of the other projects that we were talking about, but this is a new territory. This has been shown repeatedly to work in healthy communities. The feedback is converging on a way that we want to do this. And so what I'd like to do is, in the next month or so, actually hold a vote. I'm going to revise the draft that I have to reflect the changes that came out of FOSDEM, so that's actually up to date, and then actually propose it for a community-wide vote. Now that we have a healthy election committee and we've seen that we can get the election handled quickly, this will be the first stress test ahead of the next board election, I think. And so I'd encourage everybody to weigh in. The GitLab repository is still open. If you have questions, comments, leave them there or ask them here. Otherwise, I'd like to start trying to move forward with the next steps. Here's some references for some of the things I was talking about in the other part. I can post these slides wherever, if anybody's curious. And that's it. Thank you. So does anybody have questions, comments, concerns? I know that there's definitely going to be some people who are against this, but I'm hoping that we can have a mixed debate. Can somebody bring a mic down?
Hello? Ah, good. Not against it. Just seeing that structured that way, I got an immediate work-related question, actually. You know, how do you see SUSE engineering possibly working with the TSC? Like, I'm thinking, like, situations we had with 16.1 right now. You know, features, mandated as utterly essential for management and product management, you know, must be in the release, hell or high water. And, you know, in this kind of model, obviously, SUSE engineering going to go to the TSC. If OpenSUSE says no, does that mean we end up basically having to split the factory first concept because we've got to do it in SLE, but we can't do it in OpenSUSE because the TSC says no? How do you see that working?
No differently than it happens now. I mean, if we want to get into work-related stuff, I know anybody who works at SUSE knows that there are a number of people who at any given time can say, I'm wearing my community hat now, and do something completely different than what the product mandates. And so that's not any different. From a higher level perspective, what I would say is that if the product ideas that are coming out of our product management team can't survive community scrutiny, that's probably worth reexamining.
Did this satisfy you?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi. Across this journey, did you also evaluate what Debian does, or did you like deliberately leave that out?
It wasn't necessarily deliberate. It was, I picked five and figured if I made it exhaustive, it would make a really boring talk.
Okay, because I was just curious, like your take on what Debian does, if it's healthy, whatever. Like,
And honestly, not that familiar with. I know parts of how the Debian process works. I know it can be very loud. It may be a good counterbalance to this one because that very sort of loud, spirited debate is kind of what makes it a healthy community, but it also, I think, at times can breed some toxicity as well.
That's fair enough. Thank you.
So, just speak to Richard's point very quickly. I posit the example of CoreOS and Fedora, where that was an absolutely mandated from the sponsoring organization that CoreOS be a part of and represent a core component of the program. And it replaced cloud 100% from that perspective, and that did not stop us from being able to resurrect it, right? Resurrect cloud as a fundamental differentiated addition. So
the key is compromise.
Yeah, the key is definitely compromise. So I see that you know, there was one thing that you showed here, which was a very standard kind of hierarchy of decision processes moving this up into the council. What do you see the relationship with the sponsoring organization and the council being here? Because I feel like there are going to be mandates that come down that way forever, right? At least for the duration of the existence, right? Of the relationship. Are we looking at this from that perspective, which is like we have support, and how are we going to persist that support? Right. from a council perspective? Does that change from the as a result of the technical? Because I see the technical seems to be kind of outside. I think Richard's right. It appears very much outside of the purview of the sponsoring organization's mandates.
And that's largely how it is now. In my draft, I don't believe I have anything about limiting the number of seats for any particular organization. That is there for the board. And I would say that, you know, if there are enough, how do I phrase this? There should be a mixture of community members and SUSE employees on there, but it is an election, right? And so if there are going to be five seats, then they'll be populated by the five people with the most votes. Now, is it possible that the five people with the most votes involve zero SUSE employees? Probably. I think that's also pretty unlikely. But given the nature that it is a voting board, there is the possibility that SUSE will bring things, and the answer is no, we don't want to do that. Given how the project is currently structured, though, like back to Richard's point, there's not a lot of opportunity for divergence between SLES and LEAP, for example, because just of how they're structured. And Tumbleweed is the upstream, but it's an upstream that SLES only picks from every 5 or 6 years right now. And so realistically, if there are different directions happening in Tumbleweed, that's going to be sort of merging back into how we do our own project planning. I don't imagine that there's a future in which Tumbleweed ends up veering so far off what we would expect from, you know, a commercial Linux distribution that it's going to be that big of a problem, especially given how, at least from what I've seen in all memory, really, is that the path forward tends to be relatively conservative anyway. So that's if we're analyzing it from an is this absolutely possible perspective, then the answer is probably yes, but in a practical perspective, probably not.
So I also have a question. I'm aware that we have a number of release managers, and I am really wondering what are they for? Is this just to kick some maintainers, or do they really have a say in the direction?
Maybe one of the release managers would like to comment?
Yeah, so we have release managers and release engineers, right? At least on LEAP, it usually works that Max is doing like the sub... Oh, sorry, yeah. So we have release managers and release engineers, right? I'm not sure if Max is here. Max, are you here by any chance? No? Oh, yeah. So basically, release engineers are working on the acceptance of the changes into the product, right? So it's not kicking the maintainers. Well, if you screw up the submission, then they may kick you to fix it, right? And we incorporate these. You know, in my case, when it comes to working on LEAP, we have to coordinate with SLES. If you need to update something, for example, let's say KDE stack, but you are dependent on like updating Qt stack, which is in SLES, I will help you make that happen. I will ping Antonio, I will make Chiras, you know, make sure that this is all done. So some sort of feature tracking, issue tracking, bug triaging, stuff like that, and then...
Operational.
It's operational, yeah. So we do that.
Direction.
No, I wouldn't say that it's like the ownership of the product. Like, we don't have anything like product manager for LEAP. But like that's sort of organically growing. But for me, it's kind of given. I really have to build based on SLES. If SLES merges in micro, I have to follow, you know. It doesn't make any sense to do it differently. So for me, most of the direction is kind of given by how SLES does it. On Tumbleweed, that's a different story, right? That's super organic, I would say. Does it help you a little bit? And we have three release managers, right? Like Dominic was now team lead, so maybe Anna, me, and then we have Max. Max is release engineer, so not that many, you know, to be honest. Do you consider yourself? Yeah, on Kalpa. Like you do releases of Kalpa, right? So yeah, then you would say like we have Richard and Sean for Kalpa, basically. And Bernhard, yeah, absolutely, yeah, Bernhard, on slow roll.
Talking enough.
Yeah, we are. We are on the same meeting, but yeah. Does it help? I have one question too. May I really like this. I think it will actually empower people, but what I'm really worried about is, you know, it comes with the overhead, right? Like you have to meet up. You have to have like maybe bi-weekly meeting. some structure, and we have a, I can instantly think of like maybe 5-6 people that could be in certain groups, but I know they are super busy. And sometimes like they can be really, really productive, but if we kill them by additional overhead, we really have to be selective about who goes in and if they can really do the commitment on time, and if we are not killing them by adding extra overhead on them. In the end, it's still going to be the same people. We will not get new people, right? So it will be a lot about balance and how do we still, you know, do the structure and be effective and don't burn down people with extra work.
So I think there's some flexibility in how the process of all this works, right? I mean, you can start by saying, yes, there should be like a weekly committee meeting or whatever, but there's actually nothing mandating that. The idea is that, you know, the debate is documented, votes happen, and, you know, if somebody calls for like, you know, an in-person meeting to debate a particular topic, that's fine, but there's no reason that needs to be the fast path.
So I want to move on to another part of this, which is the community side, the marketing and community engagement. This is a very, to me, this is like a super important part of any kind of productization, right? Like when you know what it is that you want people to engage with and you can speak about it in a consistent fashion, you get a lot more recognition, right? But traditionally, I think this is one of the hard, like the marketing group, for example, I think is one of the most difficult groups to maintain consistency around inside of in the Fedora community. And so while I see this as a thriving part of the community itself and very important in how the community presents itself in as a whole, it does provide a place where that engagement requires someone to do things that are very commercial in structure, right? And so I'm hoping that we can find a pathway forward, and this might be more of a comment than a question, but I'm hoping that you have more to say about it. But this is a place where I feel like we're probably gonna need to have more incentive to bring people on and maybe some assistance inside of that from the sponsor's perspective.
Sure, I mean that's possible, but from what I've seen in recent years, I looked at what the definition of what you had to do to become an OpenSUSE member was, and it used to be you had to have technical contribution, and there was a big debate about, well, should that include non-technical contribution? And that tells me that there's enough interest in people doing those roles that there's an opportunity here. Now, that's not a guarantee, right? There's never any guarantee in a volunteer organization. So I can't say that, yes, there will always be like a solid core of people who with marketing experience sitting on here. And it's all volunteers. But having any structure is better than having no structure, because at least then we have, you know, a record of, you know, what campaigns were tried, these like what is our messaging around certain things, and if the messaging changes, it can be a conscious decision that can be documented that way, and then, you know, people that join the committee later can say, you know, what is the sort of the character of OpenSUSE marketing going to be, and the decisions end up being conscious rather than just a, hey, let's try something.
Have you considered different term lengths for the different committees, so that we don't just have election after election after election in a few month period?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
So, different term limits for each of the different committees, so that you don't just have an election for the board followed immediately by an election for the technical committee, followed immediately by an election for the community team.
So right now the proposal is that these committees be elected annually, which does mean that there is a potential to have a complete churn in any given year. But that was the feedback that was given as part of the FOSDEM discussion. And honestly, for roles like this where there's a much bigger sort of day-to-day operational impact than there would be for board members, I think it makes sense. So that there's a clear, this isn't working, we want new people type of parachute, I guess. I would anticipate that the way this works, though, isn't that we have election, election, election. I mean, I'm speaking just from my local experience, but when I go to the polls in November, I have an election sheet that has probably a dozen different roles on it. And it's not like I'm only electing the president or only electing my senator or something like that, right? It's all these also local roles. And so I would expect that the annual election would not only include the board, it would include CMC, it would include TSC, it would be, you know, I don't want to say it's one slate, but it would be one voting opportunity rather than trying to just try to get everybody's attention multiple times a year for it.
Yeah, so for what it's worth, that's how it works in Fedora. We have the election dates are fixed and all elections are synchronized to that window. What we do have a little differently is that because our FESCO window is sufficiently large, we have 9 people for FESCO, we basically split half of them to be reelected on a staggering term. So they all follow 1-year terms, but they're offset by 6 months. So that way, there's always half of them that knows what happened before to provide some continuity. I'm not suggesting we do that right now because the size that we're going to start with is too small for that. But if we decide, for example, that we grow the TSC to 7 or 9 people, then we can consider doing a similar approach. But again, we first have to see whether this works out at all before we start advancing that. That's pretty much how it started out with Fedora. We started with 5. When it grew to 7, then we started doing the split thing and going from there. There's all kinds of ways to make sure that there's some kind of continuity as things churn out. It's just not a thing that I think we should be worrying about right now.
Agreed. I'd love to have scalability problems.
Stupid question, maybe it was mentioned, but like, what's your ETA? When do you think that we could have this working? Like 6 months, maybe? Less? I would hope less.
I'd like to try to hold a vote by the end of next month.
Sure, we can do that.
Hi, Jeff. I have a question. Like, let's say we have a governance body which decides something, and then how those deadlocks would be resolved if they are not coming to a particular decision. So how those deadlocks would be resolved, and how it will make space for the new contributors to get into this governance model.
So I would expect deadlocks to be resolved by the TSC. I mean, there's intentionally an odd number of members on it so that those votes can be resolved. I guess if there's technically an abstention, then it's still possible to deadlock on that, and then I suppose it would have to escalate to the board to resolve, but I would really have to ask the TSC what was going on if they ended up absolutely deadlocking with an abstention vote. That seems like a pretty corner case situation, though.
Okay.
But I suppose one thing I do want to make clear, though, is that like day-to-day things don't go through the TSC. It's the high-level direction setting and conflict resolution. So like, for example, the systemd debate that happened a few years ago that just raged on for however long until it was resolved, that would be something that like, all right, well, let's have a healthy debate on it, and then the TSC votes on it. And then we move forward.
I, I think that it's quite important to realize that everything is not fully formed yet, but that's not a reason to vote against it. I think we need to move forward as a community, and this, I think, offers the best way forward, even though things are not yet cast in stone as the way all this will operate. So I'm voting yes already.
Thank you.
I completely agree with whatever was said here. I just thought about, there is a long list of decisions which were never made. So I think that the Technical Steering Commission will be very, 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 very busy for some time. And so would be there somewhere some document or something where we could start to make a to-do list for this poor committee. I don't know what to do about having both Linux and UpArmor in the tumbleweed or stuff like that, some decisions on the future direction of the project. I think there is a long list of these questions.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably premature to create a list like that without, actually no, it's not. Whether or not the TSC has to resolve it, it's still a good list to have of things that were never resolved, right? And sort of also gives potential TSC members an idea of what they're signing up for. But yeah, I think having that list sort of underscores why there's a need for a TSC, because if decisions just never happen, and as you're saying, there's an endless list of them, that's not really a sustainable situation.
Do you also consider kind of different interest groups for different parts of the system, like a special group for the graphics, one for the desktops, and because decisions there must be made which are completely independent from the other ones?
So my perspective on that is that the TSC is the high level group. And if the TSC decides, you know what, we'd like to have, you know, special interest areas with people meeting and debating and making their decisions and making recommendations to the TSC for a particular vote, that's absolutely fair. I don't think that needs to be prescribed at a high level, though.
Okay, thank you.
I would be very careful about this. We had them, let's wait, right? We had them in ALP, if you remember these work groups. I was in like two. I don't think it worked out. It was like additional, I don't know, like I would start with the committee and then we would see if it organically grows into the tree, right? With subteams and so on, but like, let's not repeat the issues. You know, something that didn't work out like 2 years ago. Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna cut it off. So anyway, thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Round of applause.